Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Hello from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. It's great to be here on Blog Talk Radio, and this is Larry Batson. And before I even get started, I would like to thank my good friend Eric Altman for sitting in last week, and when I was, well, we had a pretty brutal schedule, so the next day involved getting up at 3 a.m., so I was, didn't feel like I could do a quality program if I was up till midnight, so, but Eric, thank you, man.
Oh, my pleasure, Larry. Glad to help out.
Well, it was, that's awful nice of you. Of course, Eric is the brainchild behind this. He's behind the controls to make sure that we go error-free tonight on our program. We've had a very busy week. We've been starting our school schedule where we visit elementary schools. We see about 200 elementary schools a year with our collection of wild animals. And for those who may not know this, we had a 24-year-old Hamadryas baboon. Her name was Dolly. She'd been a part of our school programs for 24 years, and she passed away last Christmas. She was quite a star. She'd been on with Oprah Winfrey. We did do the Oprah show. Let's see, that's been about 9 years ago. People say, well, why did you, or how did you ever get on with Oprah? Well, to make a long story very short, of course, we work with the Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. And the host, well, I should say the co-host, Jim Fowler. And it so happens that a lot of the studio things that were done for the old Wild Kingdom television show with Jim Fowler and Marlon Perkins, world-renowned zoologist, were filmed right in the same building that they now house the studios for Oprah's show. So she had a theme show about history of buildings, and she featured her own. In fact, she even talked about her studios, her building, the offices actually being haunted. And I guess the night watchman had seen things that were a little bit out of the ordinary. Of course, when we were on there, the first thing that Jim Fowler talked about was some of the animals that that managed to not necessarily get away, but to explore the building and the studio areas. And Oprah didn't see any humor in that whatsoever. You see, she's afraid of wild animals. And what had happened is, when they called us up to be on the show, they'd asked Jim to be on, but of course, whenever Jim appears anywhere, they always say, bring your animals. Well, Jim Fowler doesn't really have any animals, but he knows guys all over the country that are willing to travel to wherever he might be, and they'll bring a truckload of animals, and we'll do a lecture together. So the Oprah people called us up, and they said, what can you bring? But here's the thing, Oprah is afraid of wild animals. Well, I thought, heck, she's had lots of two-legged wild animals on her show. The four-legged ones that we might bring aren't nearly as dangerous, but they just didn't catch my sense of humor, I guess. But after it was all said and done, she thought that she would be okay with a baboon that we'd been working with for a long time. And Dolly was a fantastic Hamadryas baboon. Those are the baboons that are from Egypt, the ones that have the big silver mane and the flesh-colored face. And you know, the males are quite impressive. They get about, oh, I think the Cleveland Zoo had a couple males that were 85, 90 pounds, and they have these dagger-sharp canine teeth that I'll tell you right now, there's not too many animals in the wild that will take on an adult male baboon. Because not only are they very intelligent, they're quite powerful, and they're faster than lightning. And before you know it, you've got this baboon all over you. And I'll tell you what, the fight you would lose. In fact, I ran into a fellow that was with the Miami Zoo. We were doing a lecture together in West Virginia, and he was quite impressed with our baboon. He was came up to me after our lecture, and he said, "You're either good or you're crazy." I said, "Why is that?" He said, "Well," he said, "I've been around baboons, and I don't really trust them." And he said, "I don't even know if I really like them that much. I guess they were in Africa, and they were in a couple Land Rovers, and the two Land Rovers came to this area where these baboons were. Well, the other Land Rover had some people that he didn't really know that well, and I guess one of the male baboons climbed up in the Land Rover and attacked this guy, and in his own words, he basically said he cleaned his throat out, gave him a pretty nasty cut. He said, "I'll tell you the truth, I don't know whether he lived or died." And when I offered to take him around my truck to get a little closer look at the baboon, he said, "You don't understand, I have no interest whatsoever. I know what baboons are all about." And they can be, they're quite formidable, and I just love handling them. And but anyway, Oprah, she said of all the animals that we could bring on was the baboon. So we took the baboon to Chicago, and boy, what a day that was. They put us up at the Omni Suites. The room, I think the hotel room was actually bigger than my whole house. To give you an idea, it had three fax machines in it. And it had this huge hallway. When I first arrived in Chicago, of course, it was in, I'm thinking it was like September. It was still cold outside, and it was getting ready to get cold. Of course, that's Chicago. It's cold almost year-round anyway. And my concern was for the animals that I took along, because not only did I take the baboon, but I decided to bring a couple of ringtail lemurs as extras. And when I asked them where I could park my truck and house my animals, they said, "Well, you can park your truck in this garage, but your animals you can take right to your room." I says, "You're kidding me." He says, "Oh, no." He says, "We'll bring them up." He says, "You head on up there." He said, "We'll put them on a cart. We'll bring them up to your room. No problem." So that was fantastic. So the next day we taped the Oprah show, and Oprah's got this. It's the only studio, I can tell you, the only television studio that I've been in that actually looks bigger in person than it does on television. When we used to do the Johnny Carson show with Wild Kingdom and Jim Fowler, that studio was tiny. I couldn't believe it. But Oprah's studio, it was cool. It was pretty neat. And she had the nicest folks working for her. I'll have to say that. But when we walked out with the baboon during the taping of the show, Oprah was supposed to sit in a chair right next to Jim. Well, Oprah really never sat in her chair. She stood behind it the entire time because she said, "I respect wild animals," and I guess she may have done a little research on baboons after she committed for us to bring one. But the segment went great, and the only question that she really came up with is, she goes, why does that baboon put its butt on your face?" And I told her, I said, "Well, she would like me to scratch it." That's exactly. So the audience and Oprah got a big charge out of that. But anyway, I was reading an article. I don't know where I was going with that. We just drift around here. But I was reading an article about a lady that was, when we talk about captive animals, that was killed in Pennsylvania by a bear. In fact, Eric may have heard about that, or he may have read the article. Have you tuned into that, Eric? Eric left. Well, anyway, so supposedly, the title of the article was "Woman Mauled and Killed by Pet Bear." And of course, there's always a debate on keeping wild animals in captivity. Even zoos run into that every once in a while, which is beyond me. But of course, our wild animals, and we keep, you know, a fairly large collection of animals. Now, right now, we have in our compound, we have six tigers, we have a couple black bears, ringtail lemurs, we're raising an olive baby baboon right now, alligators. I have about 20 alligators that I've rescued from rivers and lakes and here in Indiana. But I've never considered any of these animals pets. Now, I consider them very important educational tools when they travel with us to schools when they were youngsters, but of course now many of these animals that I've raised from day one with my wife Cheryl, right by my side helping me, and sometimes she takes it over herself. But we still never consider them pets. They're still basically wild animals. So when I saw the article and it said woman mauled by and killed by pet bear, it kind of, I think, oh. Of course, that's not going to be a good thing for all the responsible wild animal handlers and people that keep them in captivity and do a good job. And believe me, there's far more of those that do a good job than ones that do a poor or insufficient job. We'll put it that way. And, bears are, gosh, I would say of all the animals I've been around, I really wouldn't call them unpredictable, but they are kind of hard to read. I mean, they don't have a lot of expressions. And I've worked around bears from day one, so I've got to know what makes them tick a little bit, I guess. I mean, I can look at a bear and I can tell whether he's having a good day or a bad day. If he's a little upset, he'll curl his lip and maybe show you that canine on the right side of his face. Or just the way he holds his head, you can tell that this is not the day to go in and interact with him. Then there's times they can seem just as carefree as can be. In fact, in the circus, between the chimps and the other animals, the animals most of the circus personnel fear are the bears, any of the bear trainers. And we saw that video clip years ago of a television interview where the handler had a bear sitting in a chair and he was talking to this woman. All of a sudden, boom, the bear attacked the woman. That bear was declawed and it had a muzzle and he just kind of beat her up a little bit. But bears have very dull teeth. And I've seen people that have been bitten by bears. And they're very nasty bites. It's one of the worst bites I've ever had is when I've been injured by a black bear. Haven't had a chance to be around grizzlies too much. Have a good friend who is probably one of the best polar bear trainers in the world. His name is Albert Riggs. He's passed away now, but his daughter and his family have taken over for him. In fact, we were working with him in Ohio once and got to know him pretty good. In fact, we got to know each other really well. I mean, we became pretty good friends. He's based out of New York, and he was talking about working with the Shriners for the Shriner Circus, and they'd had their bear act as part of the circus, and he said one day one of the Shriners came up to him and said, I want my picture taken with that bear, with the big polar bear. And old Albert was a old German, he had a really thick accent. He looked at the guy and he said, that bear eat everything but your toenails. I guess the guy just kind of looked at him like, oh, and walked away and decided it. Going in the enclosure and getting the picture taken with the polar bear was a bad idea. And his daughter, she would raise these polar bears from about, 3 or 4 days old. In fact, she spent 24 hours a day with them. And I'll tell you something right now. For the serious animal handler, someone that works with wild animals, that's exactly what it takes. I mean, people say, I'd love to have your job. Well, it's not a job. It's a life. It's your lifestyle, and this is all that you'll do. Forget about vacations, not unless you're working. It's a working vacation. We get those in every once in a while. Forget about a day off because, the animals still have to be cared for. I mean, you can kind of goof off. I sure love the NFL season, but I'll tell you, between quarters, we're out making sure everybody has a drink of water and everything's okay, so your mind's always on them 24 hours a day. So it's quite a lifestyle. But for this woman, not knowing all the details behind it, not knowing what her relationship was with that bear, or whether it was just primarily a cage animal, or whether she did interact with it, or she worked with it, I haven't really heard that yet. and not being there and not really kind of judging the situation, it's hard for me to put an assessment on exactly what might have happened. But I'll tell you one thing that happened. It's not the animal's fault. There were circumstances. Something went on that was unusual that would cause something like that. Don't know what it is. I would like to be one of the people that investigated it to see, for my own information, because I have bears. Sad part of the story is the neighbor, a friend, or someone killed the bear during the attack, I assume. So it's kind of hard to judge the personality or what was behind the animal doing that, but we'll just have to wait and see. It's a sad story. You know, every time, it really hurts me when we talk about people that have been injured by captive wild animals, people that have been killed by captive wild animals. We all know the situation in Connecticut where the lady was attacked by a chimpanzee that had been in captivity for a number of years. We found out later that it was medicated for various mental states that it was in. So that pretty much assesses that, you know. Of course, that particular day, I think they said she was driving a different car than she normally drives. She had a different hairstyle or a wig. And I'll tell you what, when you deal with chimps, it's they're like bears, you know. Sometimes they're very, very hard to read. They're very powerful animals. I always chuckle to myself when someone says to me, boy, I would love a baby monkey, or I would love to raise a baby chimpanzee. Well, you don't know what you're getting into. You have no idea. Because the chimp is so strong and so powerful that by the time it's 4 or 5 years old, it's much stronger than you are. And they've got a tremendous memory. And if you have had any type of disagreement with it or done something, that chimp's going to remember it, kind of like the bear. And it's going to wait for that moment to get even. And when it does, it will get even. It will do it with such ferocity that it's pretty unbelievable. Because they're highly intelligent. They're very, very powerful animals. So have a great deal of respect for chimps. I have a friend that raised chimps for many years. He trained them. In fact, I may have talked about it a couple of weeks ago, but he had an old chimp named Sinbad that it was a pretty amazing animal. And he rescued it from a home. It had attacked a woman another instant where the animal was in captivity and bad things happened, and this woman was very seriously injured, and they were going to destroy that chimpanzee. But he kind of jumped in, and he made a dash to the home, and he was a sheriff. How he knew this was all going on. And he got to the house, and it was surrounded with animal control people and police officers and sheriffs, and their goal was just to destroy it. He didn't want that to happen. Well, they had the chimp down in the basement, basically in a great big jail cell, is how he described it. And when he walked down there, it was sitting in the corner, and it had a look on its face like, open that door, buddy. Let's see what happens. So he ran everybody out. He says, y'all get out of here. He says, I don't want to deal with this chimpanzee one-on-one. So as he's walking into the enclosure on his way in, he picked up a old coal shovel. Well, the chimp looked at him and eyed him up and down, and all of a sudden, here he came, and my friend, he raised that coal shovel up in the air, and he thought, I have to, or I'm going to get killed right here. And he came down, and he hit that chimp right across the top of the head, and, well, he knocked it out. At first, he thought he'd killed it. But when that chimp came to, they were friends. That's right, they were friends. He walked out of that house hand in hand with that chimp, and he loaded him up in his patrol car and drove him right to his house, and they were friends and amazing relationship for many, many years here in Indiana. In fact, he used to take that chimpanzee on motorcycle rides. And it had its own helmet, and it would ride right in front of him between the tank and the seat. And he said any time you were going under 30 miles an hour, the chimp would beat on the side of the gas tank, wanting you to go faster. And in the wintertime, the chimp's name was Sinbad. He'd have Sinbad out in his garage. And Sinbad would go over to the motorcycle, and he'd sit on the motorcycle, and he'd get his little helmet, he'd put it on, he'd sit there and beat on the tank, and he'd have to tell him, he said, "No, Sinbad, too cold. Can't go riding on motorcycles today." One time he got a call, though. He still lives in a little community called Russellville, Indiana. Just around the corner from right where I live in Clinton Falls. And one of the things the chimp liked to do was to drive his garden tractor, his John Deere. Well, I guess somehow he'd gotten out of his facility. He'd gone into the garage, and that chimpanzee knew how to raise the garage door to the button, the opener. He climbed on that John Deere and started it up. And the call was to him, said, "Hey, Mike," they said, "Sinbad is driving through the middle of Russellville on your tractor with his helmet on." So I bet that had to be hilarious to see that big ape driving through the suburbs of Russellville, Indiana on a John Deere. I always thought, I wonder what if anyone wasn't familiar with the situation thought when they saw that big monkey on that tractor. Had to be hilarious. I raised a lot of primates. In fact, I was in Bloomington, Indiana for a couple of years. I managed and helped this guy with an exotic animal. Well, it was kind of a store, I guess. He'd sold exotic animals, and this was in the early 70s when you could buy monkeys out of comic books, believe it or not. And he wanted me to come down there because I'd had some dealings with different things. And of course, at that time, I was only 20 years old, so I'd really just kind of begin all this wild animal stuff. But what an experience that was. I'll tell you, we had everything. We had lions, we had leopards, all the monkeys you could ever imagine, all the South American monkeys. We had the Asian monkeys. We had, I adopted a pigtail macaque. His name, called him Baby Ua because of the sound he would make. Ua, ua. He'd make that sound. And I thought, well, heck, man, that's your name. And he was pretty cool. And I had him for quite some time. I'm thinking about 2 years till I had to leave Bloomington and move back home because I had no money. Anyway, but I had a trailer that I stayed in right outside of Bloomington, and the monkey folks, well, he was out there with me. I had a big cage for him, you know, and lived alone, so was some company, and we'd go on little drives together. I'd had a Volkswagen, and he'd sit in the passenger seat. We'd go running around all over Bloomington. And one morning, I was going into work. Gosh, it was a nice day. Had all the windows rolled down. And I'm driving right through downtown Bloomington and came to a stop light. And I can still remember right next to me, there was a big Cadillac, big white Cadillac, a white interior. And sitting in that Cadillac was a big old guy with a cigar that had a white suit on and tie, and boy, he was something else. He was pretty special. Well, I must have thought he was special too, because she jumped out of the car of my Volkswagen, hopped into the Cadillac, sat on the guy's lap, and he's got this look like, what in the heck is going on here? And he and Baby Ua, what she would do is she would grab your ears and then stick her tongue up your nose. So that's exactly what he did. He grabbed this fella's ears, and there was that monkey tongue going up his nose, and his arms were flailing through the air. He was carrying on. About that time, I thought, oh, I better get Ua back in here. So I hollered for him, and here he come running about as fast as he could, and this guy was still in some kind of shock, and I just took off as fast as I could. Wherever he was heading, I bet he had a good story to tell, and I'll bet there was not a person in that room that believed a word that he had to say. But man, I'll tell you what, over the years I've had some wonderful adventures with wild animals. You know, 99% of them have been great. Absolutely. You know, and I consider these things my friends. And really, when I hear something like the bear attack in Pennsylvania, the chimpanzee mauling in Connecticut, you know, the other things that have happened over the years, it really makes me quite sad. But, you know, they'll run that in the papers, they'll run that on television, it'll be all over the internet. And someone will come up and say, well, we need to pass more laws. Well, there's plenty of laws, folks. We're all regulated. We're regulated by the United States Department of Agriculture. We're regulated by the various Department of Natural Resources for every state. They come inspect us, make sure everything's okay. But usually what happens a lot of times is the person just has a lion, a bear, or whatever. You know, they don't even bother with going through the regulation process. They just keep the animal for years, and not unless someone calls up and says, hey, there's a guy next door that has this or that. They won't investigate it until something happens. And I understand the woman, the poor woman who was killed, she didn't really, her permits had expired, or she didn't have the proper permits or something, and there we go again, you know. But all the folks that I've worked with over the years that try and do it right, we want this to work, you know, and There's plenty of regulations. We're regulated enough, and I'm just sorry for this incident. You know, our insurance will go up, but I've always said this. You know what's one of the most dangerous things? Lawnmowers. Absolutely. Everybody that has a lawn. How many people are injured each summer by either a riding lawnmower or just a lawnmower or whatever? I used to say anybody that has a lawnmower ought to have a $1 million liability policy, because they're flat out dangerous. Absolutely. But you know, someone that accidentally sticks their foot underneath a lawnmower or rock gets tossed out and knocks somebody in the head, that doesn't make good television. That's just too common. That doesn't make good newspaper print space. No, no. But someone attacked by a bear, or somebody mauled by a lion, or partially eaten by an alligator in the Everglades, there you go. That's a whole different story. That's a whole different story, and it's just kind of distressing sometimes. Well, I'm on my soapbox. I'll get off of it. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. And I'll tell you what, I haven't done this yet, and I told myself I wasn't going to, but you know what, the hey, we're going to go into the world of Bigfoot, and I'm going to talk a little bit about my research studies of probably one of the most fascinating subjects next to the natural world. Absolutely. We'll be right back after these brief commercial messages. You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Stir in the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent.
There are some visitors you'd just rather not see. Like your obnoxious brother-in-law, Louie.
Hey, everybody, we're here! It's good to see you! When do we eat?
But then there are some visitors you just can't get enough of. To make your farm or ranch a more attractive place for the visitors you actually want to see, contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office. They can help you build the habitat wildlife loves. But as for Louie, try disconnecting the doorbell. This message brought to you by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service and this radio station.
Take me fishing. And show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing, so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water, and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing, because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. Nice to have you here tonight. I'm glad that you all tuned in. This is quite a new experience. We're here every Thursday night from 11 to 12, and gosh, it's absolutely been great. Got lots of wonderful feedback. By the way, go to our website. It's pretty easy to remember. It's www.larrytheanimalguy.com. Has pictures of our animals from past and present. It tells about some of the activities that we're involved with animal rescue. We right now have 20 alligators that we've rescued from the rivers and lakes here in Indiana, or ones that have been confiscated by our Department of Natural Resources. And also about our wildlife education programs. And we are a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. If you would like to help out, we have a special donation page, and we greatly appreciate any contribution. That really, really helps us out, because right now, well, we have 6 tigers we've rescued, and someone always asks, what's involved with taking care of all these animals? Well, I will tell you right now, to maintain our 6 tigers, each year runs about $9,000. So we're always looking for support and help, and as I said, any contribution is greatly appreciated. Also, through our website, you can pick up some items such as our Bigfoot DVDs and CDs. That's right, Bigfoot. A lot of my friends know that I've been involved with this for a number of years, and of course now it's kind of gone international because of the recent talk that I gave for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And I do have a few DVDs left of that particular lecture, so you can go to the website and check it out and see how to order it. I think you'll enjoy it. I've got the CDs as well that you can listen to that have Bigfoot stories and reports that I've collected over the years. And I've always told people, what you want to do is, if you go camping, He'd take you a CD player. You're all around that campfire, you just pop one of those CDs in, and it might make that camping experience a little more special for everybody. Now, I don't know how many people's in the chat room. Eric, do you have any numbers on that, or what's going on, or we have any questions from anyone?
So far, no questions from the chat room, but right now we have, myself included, four guests in the chat room tonight. OSA Real would like to just ask the question, would like to know, have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
Well, I'm not 100% sure, to tell you the truth. I saw something unusual. I saw two somethings unusual one night, but I didn't get a good enough look at it to really determine what I had seen, or whether it was somebody, too, that might have been trying to pull a fast one on the old animal guy. But So I can't say for sure. Talked to quite a few eyewitnesses, though. I know Eric has as well, and I think that's probably been my most compelling evidence. One of my best stories, best reports I've ever gotten. In fact, I have this pretty well documented through our CDs, but it's always a fun story. It happened up in northern Indiana by Peru along the Wabash River. What happened one particular night was pretty amazing. A couple guys, one had just returned from Vietnam. He'd been through some pretty heavy combat. He'd seen some pretty bad things, the way he'd put it. And he decided when he returned from war, the first thing he wanted to do was to go back home, get his nephew, and go fishing. That's exactly what he did. They planned a two-day trip. They were going to do a float trip down the Wabash River. And their plan was to float down the Wabash River one day, set up camp in a spot where it looked pretty remote, where they were by themselves, and then float down the rest of the way and get picked up about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, that first day, they're floating down the river, and they had one of these old John boats, and if you're familiar with a John boat, it's a big, heavy fishing boat. I mean, they weigh a ton. They're very well built. Very seldom ever leak. And it's hard to sink one, but it's a big, strong, heavy boat. So they decide to take along also a dog. In fact, a fellow that came back from Vietnam, he'd gotten this dog. He decided he wanted to take him along on the trip, too. So they're floating down the Wabash, and they didn't see anybody all day. It's pretty quiet, pretty reclusive. And he thought it was absolutely great. He was enjoying this trip. Got, 5, 6 o'clock in the afternoon. They thought, wow. I said, let's see if we can find a good place to camp. We'll tie the boat up along shore. And as I said, they'd seen no one that day. So they tied the boat up and got out their machetes, and they cleared a spot. Sure enough, there wasn't any evidence of anybody that had been in that area for a long time. Usually a lot of these rivers you'll see discarded bait boxes and old nightcrawler containers. None of that. No beer cans. It was good. It was wild. So they set up camp and collected firewood, and they had a pretty good little fire going. They'd caught some fish, so they had dinner. They had a little something to eat and chatted for a while, and about 10:30 decided, man, this was quite a day. I mean, they were exhausted. So they climbed in the tent to go to sleep, and dog did too. Oh, yeah, dog was right in between them. They'd fallen off asleep, and about midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. Dog sits up. Dog lets out this low, distinctive growl. Well, the fellow that had been in Vietnam, he was a pretty light sleeper because of that experience. But I woke him right up. And he's listening. And it sounded like somebody was messing with the things they had around the campfire. So his first assumption was raccoons. Because in this part of Indiana, we have no bears. And usually raccoons are the ones that will invade a camp. So when he heard that, he thought, well, I'll just send the dog after him. So he pulled up the zipper and says, go get him. Dog runs out. He listens and he hears this banging around. And boy, what a battle going on. I mean, whatever that dog is up against, boy, he's giving it hell. All of a sudden, he hears this loud boom, thud. The dog comes back into the tent. He tries sending him back out. Go get him, boy. Go get him. Dog just sits there. He's not going back out of the tent. See, this particular dog was special. It was an attack-trained German Shepherd. And there was no way that dog was leaving that tent, so he thought, what in the world has intimidated this dog so much? So about the time he looks out, whatever was there, he can hear it running through the woods. And it's running back down toward the river. He says it sounded very distinctive. I said, it sounded like two steps. I mean, or boom, boom, shoot, shoot, shoot. Wasn't four-legged. He said it sounded two-legged. Then they listen, and they can hear their boat being knocked around on the rocks where they tied it up. Then all of a sudden they can hear these big splashes in the river from their camp. The river wasn't that far from where they had their tent set up. Then he thought to himself, something is throwing basically what it sounded like, big rocks into the river. And then that something started throwing rocks through the trees back toward the camp. And he said, whatever it was throwing him so hard that it reminded him when he was in the jungles of Vietnam, when mortar shells would go through the forest, they'd be breaking the leaves and limbs as they did, except the only difference was these rocks. There was no explosion at the end. Then this something started coming up through the woods, coming back to the camp. Well, by this time, they'd both climbed out of the tent. And as the fellow who told me of these events, said they were scared. As this was all going on, a big fog rolled in. So it made it really hard to see anything in the forest around them. And as something came up to camp and it started circling their camp. The guy from Vietnam had two guns, and his nephew asked if he could have one of them. He said, nope. I'm keeping both of them. And they both stood up next to a tree with their backs to the tree as this thing circled around and around. And I asked him, I said, did you get a good look at it? He said, we did. He says it was huge. He said it looked like it was about 8 feet tall, had these long arms that hung to its knees. And he said, it wasn't really heavy. He said, it just the whole animal, the whole creature, whatever it was just huge. He says, it wasn't like a bodybuilder or anything. It wasn't like that. He said, it was just huge. I said, did you see its face? He goes, no. So the only thing we could really see was the silhouette of this thing from the shine of the campfire and the fog. And he said, what amazed us so much, not only amazed us, but really kind of bothered us, was how fast that it moved. He said it was so quick that they looked at each other and they both realized something. That if this thing, if this creature, if this animal, whatever it was, if it wanted them, it could take them at any given moment. All night long, these two guys sat in that campsite with their backs against that tree as they stared into the fog and they watched this walk around and around their campsite. Finally, about daylight, it left. And as he said, we never really got a good look at it. He said, I would have given anything just to see its face. Just to get more details, something. But we really did not get a good look at it. But there's one thing that they decided, that they were going to break this camp up, they were going to pack it up, and they were going to get back in that boat, and they were going to head on down the Wabash River. They were not going to waste any time, and they were not going to stick around in this spot any longer. In fact, I can still remember one of our conversations. I said, would you take me to this spot? And he said, I'll draw you a map. He said, but I'll never go back there again. He told me that he was never so terrified his entire life. He said even when he was in heavy combat, he was more terrified when they were in this camp on this fishing trip on this foggy night in northern Indiana with this whatever it was walking around their camp and threatening them.
Well, folks, it looks like we've lost Larry temporarily here. We're going to try to get him back on the air. I do apologize for that. Not sure exactly what happened, but we are going to try to get him back on the air. Let's see if we can bring Larry back on the air here.
I'm back.
Larry, you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, somehow you dropped off the line there, but we got you back on the air with us.
I know. I was just... Well, it's nice to be back. I don't know what happened. It was great to be back. What happened, to finish my Bigfoot tale story, is that they were supposed to meet their party, I believe, about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they were waiting there at 10 a.m. So the trip was really quite it was shortened a great deal. But you get reports like this. I'll tell you what, where I live in the Putnam County and Park County area here in Indiana, one of the reasons I bought this property, besides it's a beautiful remote location where I can keep this collection of wild animals, and you know, I don't bother anybody. It's wonderful. Was there had been several sightings around this area. In fact, I had some good friends up from Florida, and they were staying with me, and we were working on a bear enclosure, and one afternoon I told them, I said, well, I need to run into town and pick up some more supplies, and also I need to pick up some tiger food. Well, I was gone for maybe 2 hours, and I come back, and one of the guys tells me, in fact, these guys are real characters. I mean, these are old gator hunters from the Everglades. they weren't afraid of too much. They weren't intimidated by too much. They were, yeah, you got the idea. And one of them says to me, he says, Larry, he says, I don't know what was back in your woods, but something walked up that back ravine, and I'm going to tell you right now, he was big. I says, what? He says, yep. He says, it was making a heck of a ruckus. He says, I don't have any idea what it was, but he was pretty shook up. So I didn't think any more about it, and that night I'm going out to feed the cats, and I had this one Siberian tiger. His name was Louie. He weighed about 650 pounds. He was a monster. He was fearless. I mean, you'd be fearless, too, if you weighed 650 pounds and had claws and teeth. He was. And when you walk up to his enclosure and you walk by his door with that bucket of meat, I mean, he came unglued. It was like he had to make the kill himself. You know, I just take the meat into his cage and open up the door and let him in, and he would eat. And as he's eating, he'd be growling just like he'd made a kill. Well, that particular night, the day that these fellows had heard this come through my ravine, well, that night when I'm walking up there with that meat to that tiger, he's not coming up to the door like he normally does. And it was dark. And I'm thinking to myself, what in the world? Has he gotten out? I'm looking down through his enclosure, and I can see him clear at the other end. And he's paying no attention to me whatsoever, which was unbelievable, very unusual. And he's looking straight back into the woods, straight back into that ravine, straight back where these guys had heard that sound earlier. And he had total focus. I mean, he was not a bit interested in the meat. He was not a bit interested in me. In fact, I closed the gate, put the meat in the other side of his enclosure, opened his door. Normally, he would run in there as fast as he could and start eating. None of that happened. He just stared right straight back into the woods. And all the cats that night, the mountain lions, the lions, the other tigers, none of them acted the way they normally did. None of them ate the way they normally eat. Whatever it was that walked back through my forest and back through my ravine had definitely got their attention. So whether it was a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch, I cannot say for sure. But I'm going to tell you something right now. There's nothing else in our forest, in our woods, that would get this kind of reaction from these big cats. I mean, a deer's not going to get that kind of reaction. They might be wanting to go hunt the deer, but they're not going to sit there frozen like they're absolutely terrified. That's not going to happen in that situation. So who knows? But it was definitely quite eye-opening. I've been involved with this Bigfoot thing, research, studying it, interviewing eyewitnesses, visiting places where supposedly they'd been sighted now. Well, gosh, close to 40 years, and I can't believe it. And I've decided that, as many of you may as well have decided, that there's definitely something to this, that we're sharing this planet with some unknown bipedal animal. Now, I don't think it's a big monkey, because if I thought it was a big monkey, my thoughts would be we'd already have one in a zoo or a giant bottle of alcohol somewhere. Absolutely. This is more human-like. It would have to be. Highly intelligent. Obviously. The anthropologists, I can still remember talking about tribes that live in the vast forest in New Guinea. And when they'd go in to study these remote tribes, they would say that If these people did not want to be found, you would not find them. They could disappear. There would not even be remnants left of where they'd camped. They could clean up and they could just flat disappear if they wanted to. So when I hear stories like this, I try and find parallels, different situations. And if you do, if one of these things does not want you to find it, you're not going to find it. I can still remember we filmed Monster Quest, the television show on the History Channel, a couple of years ago. And one of the things that I said in my interview, and they never ran it, I think I understand why. And I told them, I said, do you really think that on these little expeditions that they go out on with their four-wheel drives and their big Winnebagos and their walkie-talkies and their cameras they got hanging on the trees, that they're ever going to find this under this type of situation? I said, we could put those guys, these expeditions, in areas where there are mountain lions that we know exist, and they're not going to find one of those, let alone something 10 times as intelligent, far more devious. This is a highly intelligent animal, folks, if it really does exist. And I think that it does. Because this has either been one of the greatest hoaxes that's ever been put on, or it's one of the most fascinating animals we have living on this planet. And I think the latter. I think it's quite fascinating. I think there's people out there that live in places where they have frequent occurrences happen to them, but they don't tell anybody. I still believe that. I get those emails. I get those calls. They tell me, you're the only one I've ever told this to. And I think about 95% of the sightings that have ever been made by anyone are never reported. Just get a little drivel. It's the 5% of people that are willing and brave enough to say, hey, I saw an animal that walked on two legs that looked human but was hair covered. And they would swear to that. Absolutely. So we'll carry on. And like John Green once told me, the Bigfoot journalist, he said, the longer you pursue this, the more questions you're going to have. Nothing is clear in this subject. There are no experts. There are people that know maybe a little bit more about it than others, but this is, without a doubt, one of the most fascinating and one of the most frustrating subjects I've ever been involved with. I know we're running out of time. Man, the hour flies by so quickly. I want to thank Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank Wildlife Educational Services, our non-for-profit. Be sure you go to our website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. I want to thank Eric Goldman for being behind the controls to make this all possible. I sit here and yak for an hour. And I hope everybody, you know, have a great week. And by the way, I'm going to be in Shepherdstown, West Virginia next Saturday, the National Conservation Training Center, for their big open house. And the wife and I will be there with our animals. So if you live anywhere close to Shepherdstown, West Virginia, come and see us. Thank you very much, Eric. And
my pleasure, Larry. You have a good week, and I'll catch you again next Thursday night.
You betcha. Thanks for listening to Larry Batson's Wild World. It's Blog Talk Radio. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.